I'll just take this part right here.
Just
and
cut that.
We'll cut us talking about how there are spoilers. We got to the end and forgot the spoiler alert. So, spoiler
that'll
alert.
Work well.
Now back to where it was before. Hello, podcast listeners and anime fans. This is Torin.
And this is Andrew.
Oh, man. And we are having a bit of a blast from the past with this episode. Because we are covering the 1995 film Ninja Scroll. The movie, not the series. We're not covering the series.
I didn't know there was a series until I was like, oh, there was a 2003 series?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like 26 episodes or something like that, I think. I don't know. Yeah, I didn't know there was one until I went to look this up again to watch it again. Yeah. I was like, oh, there was a series. No, we're covering the movie. And this is great because I watched this a good while back. You had never seen this.
No, so, I've heard of it.
So hopefully
as people reference it as a popular ninja movie.
Yeah, so hopefully that gives us a really nice perspective from it. Because this was recommended to me years ago, probably a decade ago, I think, by someone. And I liked it then, so it was interesting to watch it again. I don't remember like any of it, so it was a nice rewatch. With that, let's get it out of the way. Next, after this one, if you're trying to keep up, we're going to do Cycle Pass next, which is really popular. Yep. And
I've never seen it.
And I'm sure some people are going to love the fact we're covering Cycle Pass. I remember loving it. We'll see if that's still the case as I get older. Yes.
So your opinions change.
Yes. Let's get all that out of the side, though. Andrew, what did you think of Ninja Scroll?
I gave it a 10 on 10, as it seemed like... Now, my knowledge of anime history is not the best. Yeah. I never really went back and watched anything. I watched a couple of episodes of Fist of the North Star, which this feels a little bit in terms of like the art style.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is the one anime that everyone else copied in terms of ninjas. Because everyone always copies everyone else in terms of you fall in love with a show and then you become a producer and or an artist or a writer and go, I want to make another one of this thing with my own spin. The slogan was basically the one ninja show that everyone else copied.
Yeah.
If you've got a ninja, they're going to do one of the things in this series or this movie.
Yep. So as far as me, Ninja Scroll is truly a 90s wandering hero story. It is filled with intrigue, deception, supernatural powers, and plenty of ninjas. I gave it an 8 out of 10. It is a solid film. I have maybe half a page of notes because it's just I didn't have much that I felt the need to actually make a like write a note for. But we'll get into that a bit more in a bit. For those,
I had
who,
trouble writing my own notes because I got so enthralled with the movie itself.
Yeah, that's part of the situation I was in. Anyway, for those who don't know or haven't watched it since 95 or however
whenever
long ago,
it came out and...
into the synopsis, Jubei Kibagami. Sorry, I butchered names. He wanders feudal Japan as a sword for hire. He stumbles across Kagero, the sole survivor of a ninja clan, as she is being assaulted by one of the eight devils. Jubei helps to save Kagero, and they split ways. Jubei runs across the devil again and also meets Dakuan, a spy for the shogunate. Dakuan hires Jubei through devious means to help him deal with the eight devils and figure out their plan. Kagero ends up joining the duo, and they set out to solve the mystery and stop them at all costs. That's a very overarching synopsis because a lot happens, but yet a lot doesn't.
That's straight up like the first 20 minutes or something.
Yeah. I mean, a lot. So it's just a general synopsis, because they, as I mentioned in my little thing, there's a lot of intrigue and deception in this. And that is what a decent amount of this the movie is them just info dropping here and there. Like, we find out the history of Jubei and, like, why he wanders and all that. You get this intrigue about, like, the different clans and why they're kind of in their situation, what they're doing. There's a lot of that happens, or they mention. And in the end, though, none of it really matters. Because for the most part, the movie could be summed up with our three guys fight those eight guys. And that's that.
Yeah. See how they win, because they're the heroes.
Yeah. So anyway, first thing I want to mention, because it is a 1995 film, is, does it age well? And I don't know how you feel about, does it age well?
So I watched a lot of JoJo, so I know the art style that these were based on, or the JoJo was based on, which was based on Fist of the North Star, giant men with chins who could cut the film they were on.
Yeah.
Everyone has a sharp, mountainous chin, including the women.
Except when they don't. Which is one of the weird parts about this when I was watching it animation-wise, is obviously this is from, being from 95, this is in essence, as far as I can tell, entirely hand-drawn animation. So depending the angle someone is looking, they either have a strong pointed chin or super rounded, almost like Saitama from One Punch. Like, you could tell that depending how they had to draw, like, the angle they were looking, sometimes their chin would just be, like, literally a line that was swooped. Mm-hmm. And it felt a little weird, but at the same time...
It did a bit, but... Like, I recognize the art style, so, like, it's not a shock to me.
Overall, though, I thought the animation was good. I'm sure for its time, it was probably excellent and great, and I think a lot of it does hold up, but there are moments that will, like, especially the very beginning, you could tell almost a hesitation to show too much gore or violence, which they later... stopped caring about.
Overwhelmingly, yeah, it became very violent and very bloody.
I almost wonder if part of it was reserving it so that you get more of a shock when that guy shows up, the rock guy that I can't think of his name, because it's hard to keep track of the eight devils' names. There's too many characters.
I remember Jubei and Kagero, and then that was it.
Oh, you don't remember Daquan? Or, like, the old guy? I loved his character till the end.
And Genma.
Yeah, Genma.
Yeah, yeah. The old man's like, this is all according to my plan. Like, really?
Yeah, towards the end, they were trying to, I think, reveal that he was not as straight-laced as we thought. Like, you already knew he kind of wasn't when he poisons the main character.
Yeah.
But later, I think they were trying to make him even more seem like an a-hole, where he's like, whatever, I wanted you to die anyway, because I don't want witnesses, I would assume is his thing, being a spy. Yeah. But yet he lets Jubei just leave. It's like, oh, you'll die before you even get to shore. It's like,
right.
You're also a spy for the shogunate. I'm pretty sure your theory is guarantee everything. So the fact you still just let him go feels okay.
This anyway. Guy who walked out of all sorts of things he should have died from.
Yeah, it felt a little odd. But
yeah,
I mean, maybe we're supposed to assume that he ended up liking Jubei a bit. And he's kind of like, oh, if you live, I'm not that worried about it. Whatever.
Yeah.
Because Jubei also does seem like the kind of guy who is not going to just turn around and now start screwing him up.
Well, I mean, he did. We're already jumping to the end of the movie here, but he did thing where he cut the gold bar out of the old man's sleeve. And in that cut, he definitely could have just killed the old man if that was his intention. So it's not like he was that maliciously against the old man. He just didn't want to see him again.
Yeah.
And the old man is like, I'll let you live for not killing me.
But this is also this type of movie where the assumption also would be maybe the old man knew he wasn't going to kill him and was just going to cut the sleeve and get the bar. So he just let it happen. Because that's literally the type of movie this is.
Yeah, that the old man's plan. The old man's plan was to find a wandering swordsman, poison him, find a poison tester woman and ninja, and then have them both collaborate, fall in love. The woman has sex with him to cure the poison I poisoned the wandering swordsman with. And then dies dramatically, and then the swordsman beats the enemy on the boat. This was all part of my plan.
Yep. And at the end, the swordmen die. But that doesn't happen. So that's the one part of his plan that failed. Or did he plan for that to happen too? Yeah, no. All right, let's kind of...
he never really felt like that kind of character.
Yeah, he didn't.
Like the fact that it was just the whole thing was my plan. It just felt like a pull.
I'm pretty sure that was supposed to be, a pull. All right, so as you mentioned, this seems to be probably the inspiration for a lot of ninja characters from various art forms. Mm-hmm. And part of what you're referring to is the supernatural aspect of it. So first off, strings are not strings. They're whatever you want them to be, and they magically connect to anything.
They're adamantine ropes, strings that never break despite holding two people off of a cliff.
It's also, so that's a nitpick. I'll save that for later. Anyway, so we have the eight devils. Now, our main characters, their superpowers are just... Our main guy is a really good swordsman. Mm-hmm. He's just the best swordsman. The chick's main power is she's a ninja who is saturated with poison, her body. Yes. So she's resistant
to poison. She doesn't use poison, really. I don't think she ever uses poison. By choice.
Correct. I don't think we see her do it by choice. Because the idea, she's poison ivy, for those who want to know what's up. She's poison ivy. So if she kisses people, etc., she's so saturated with poison that they get poisoned.
Yes.
And she's resistant to poison because poison cures poison for the main character. But the chick who's saturated in poison, when she gets poisoned, it does not neutralize her own poison.
Yeah, she just grows the poison back.
Yeah.
She gets bit by a snake at one point, and it's like, oh, you'll die any second now. And then they take out her, and they're like, oh, but I'm fine with the snake bite. That didn't affect me.
Yeah, no, I can't be poisoned. I'm immune. Okay, so that's her power. Dakwan is just a really good ninja.
He easily disappears, but I don't think he actually does any fighting, really. He throws in assist kunais occasionally.
Yeah, he throws kunai and shuriken here and there. But yeah, otherwise, he just seems to be really good at being a spy. So hiding, escaping, and observing. But yeah, he's the only person in his group that survived. I guess that's because he's so good at just running away. Because his whole team gets killed except him, which is why he wants the main character... to help.
Yes.
I will admit, I did find a good laugh out of the him acting like a tree, like a limb on a tree.
Yeah, that was some crazy nonsense.
he totally went all stick bug, which was kind of hilarious. The bad ninja dude's like, oh, he ran away, whatever. And then he's
just right there.
It shows him, I think implies that he was naked. Using his bony, skinny old man body to act
old
like
man
a limb.
Flesh to appear to be a tree branch.
Okay. It was kind of cool, though. It was a nifty concept.
Mm-hmm.
So, for the most part, he just avoids stuff. So, the big thing, the most of the supernatural aspect comes from the eight devils. The first guy we run into can apparently turn his skin to stone or stone-like state. So that's pretty cool. And he throws a giant double-sided like blade that
apparently has returning property. It's a straight blade, but it spins and can go for like 500 feet and then returns itself.
Yeah, it's a giant boomerang. That's a straight blade that can like be thrown and go through trees and so many bodies and not lose momentum.
Yeah.
Supernatural stuff. Yay.
Yeah.
I will say the only thing from like modern era that seems to be inspired by this is the concept of like stone skin. Which,
like I said, they all have at least a basic idea of a thing that people use in more modern era of like, I can toughen my body to take no damage.
Yeah. Just look at My Hero, who has two of them.
Yeah.
That use this exact idea. With that being said, everyone, we're not saying that for sure everything copied this or is inspired by this. I am sure a lot of this from Ninja Scroll is probably inspired by Japanese like mythology, lore, whatever.
Yeah.
We're not necessarily saying that this thing like started any of these things, but it definitely right. feels...
We just don't have the history lesson of where Ninja Scroll got their ideas.
Yeah, it's the first one I know of that has pulled a lot of these together into like an action movie. So that guy was interesting. He gets beat by Poison, in essence.
Yes.
Her poison from when he tried to assault her.
He forces his tongue down her throat and she poisons him unintentionally from that.
Yeah.
Which causes his skin to crack and his... And the swordsman Jubei's blade to cut through him.
Yes. It is clever. I mean, the first time that he encounters him, he hits him in the eye to kind of avoid the whole stone skin thing. He's like, oh, you're not hard everywhere. Or I doubt you're hard everywhere. And then like, hits him in the eye. It's a nifty way to defeat him. Part of me is like, I wish it was more clever, but then it works well for the story to kind of, you don't know her power. And the old guy, when he's observing Jubei, is kind of like, oh, you didn't beat him alone. And it is kind of an unfolding of information that is intriguing as the watcher. You're like, okay, who helped him? Like, did the old guy do something? You eventually find out that it was her poison. So it's like, I kind of wish it was more clever, but at the same time, it works for the narrative of like trying to unfold this information. The second one we see
is the woman with snake tattoos.
Yes. So she
attacks Jubei while he's bathing.
Yeah. So she apparently controls snakes, but she can call them from seemingly anywhere. She can have them be on her body as tattoos.
Yeah, apparently.
She can have them come out of places in her body to attack people, as we found out later.
Yeah, groin snake.
Yeah, groin snake. This character is one of them where I was, I think, the most disappointed with how it was resolved. So she seemingly is not liked by Genma, who's in charge of the leader of the Eight Devils. She is not liked by him because she is sleeping with the... not liked by what's his name, that's the leader of the Eight Devils, because she's sleeping with Genma. And that guy has a thing for Genma.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I
think she's sleeping with multiple people and she's trying to sleep with the lightning wire guy and he's putting her advances away.
No, that's the fire chick. That's the gunpowder.
Oh yeah, the fire chick. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, "Hey yo, good luck because that chick that you like that chick is sleeping with Genma, who you want to be with. So you're screwed because Genma swings both ways and is sleeping with her. Mm-hmm. So he's mad about that. And she did all that because he turns her away all the time.
Yeah.
Because she wants to be with him. It's weird. It's this weird love thing that they threw in. I think it mostly kind of works because, one, it's nifty to see a main character or a main villain turn away female advances. You don't see that very often. And also, this was from 93, and they're talking about people swinging both ways. And, like, it's kind of amusing that all this was...
Yeah, and it's not played as, like, a, oh...
Yeah, it's just played as a just straight information thing where it's like, oh, yeah, you're gay for that guy. But guess what? He swings both ways. So, like, he's getting things from these girls. So good luck. Like, he's not, even if you sleep with, in essence, it's implied, even if you sleep with him, it doesn't matter. Like, he's not going to be yours.
Yeah.
Like,
he's not yours exclusively.
Yeah. So, very interesting because it's just offhand. And it's from the 90s.
Yeah.
And yet nowadays this is, people are still pushing for this type of thing to happen more often and be more. Yeah.
And it's not super common in anime itself, I believe, of like having a bisexual villain.
One on top of that, having, I think the big thing is that it is so, it doesn't matter, which I think is why it's impressive the way they did it. Like, nowadays, if you see stuff like that in anime, it's usually done for, like, a plot reason. Or done is, like, a obviously almost forced in some way, or...
Or just a dramatic scene of, like, you see the villain and he's got men and women hanging over him.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, he's really impressive because he...
Yeah, it's
has sex with everyone.
Yeah, it's so irrelevant to the story, which is, I think, what is so impressive about it. It's like, yeah, it's just who these people are.
Yeah,
like we're not,
it gives them some characterization.
But at the same time,
but we're not getting into it.
Yeah, we're not forcing this onto you and being like, hey, look at this character. This is what they are. It's just like, nope, that's not the way they are. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so. Snake chick, well, all this led down to she was killed by her ally, quote unquote, yes. Ally. Because he's like,
they captured her.
Yeah. They were questioning her, and he's like, cool, I can kill you because I don't like you. And now I can justify it as you failed me twice. So I had to deal with you. So it's kind of disappointing. I get that they're partly showing how bad the Eight Devils are. That they're
not. It's very, very easy to just betray one another because there's no loyalty except to Genma.
I don't even know if there's loyalty to Genma. I think it's just straight up, they're all independent. Like, they're working together, but they're not together.
Yeah.
I think is part of the idea. And also, it's supposed to build up this guy that's leading the Eight Devils, or like the head of the Eight Devils, I guess. It's supposed to also show that he's a badass. He's like, I snuck an extra string on your neck and you didn't even notice. So you're an idiot. Like, you should die. You're an amateur.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's like the fact I pulled one over on you shows how bad of a person you were to begin with.
Yeah.
So she was a nifty person. I wish they would have done a bit more with her because they kind of did build her up a bit between the first engagement and then the main engagement. Like, she had the main character surrounded by snakes. I don't know why she didn't do anything at that point. But yeah, whatever. I guess she wanted to question him. And then she just easily dies. Yes. All right. Next person they moved on to, I think after that, was it the other chick or the ninja guy?
The ninja guy shows up to fight the old man. And that's where he turns into a tree. And then the ninja guy leaves.
Yeah.
And they move on to the explosion. And wait, was it the bee guy next?
The wasp guy was probably the most supernatural of all of them.
Yes.
Which is weird.
Disgusting. First of all, he's an ugly person with a hunchback.
Yes. But he has a hunchback because it's a wasp nest.
Yeah.
That's on his back.
Yeah, but he was ugly before that. So I don't know if he just, they were like, oh, he's an ugly person. And because he was ugly with a hunchback, he felt no pain when the bees turned his back into a nest.
I don't know. It's hard to say whether the hunch is the nest or if he was a hunchback that then it became a nest. Doesn't matter either way. So the concept is that he apparently works with wasps. He can communicate with them and then control them, and they live in his back.
Yes.
Really nothing else past that that's unique about him. He's an okay ninja. He can fight decently with his trident with two points. I don't know what they're called. It's a Japanese weapon. I don't remember what they're called. But it's a trident with only the outer points, no center point.
Is it a curved thing? I don't know what it's called, but I thought it was a capturing weapon.
It is. I don't remember what they're called. But he fights with one of those, and he's a decent fighter. Now, this is probably the most unique way he defeated one of the devils. I was actually impressed by this one. They did feel the need to explain it to us, which did ruin it a bit.
I thought it was fine because I wasn't entirely certain why he died from drowning, basically. Like, I could understand the general concept that the bees were, but having it explained that he fell in water and the bees ate their way out in doing so, killing him.
Yeah. They probably could have just done it. They probably could have done it by showing the wasps, like, escaping.
Eating it. I think that might have been too gory.
Maybe. Or they could have had it when the body floated up to the surface. They could have just had the wasps, like, flying off from him. Maybe that would have been able to show it. But they explained it. I do find it weird, though, that he said, don't touch him. Like, don't touch him. He's my kill, to the other devils that were hanging out, like, just observing this fight. He gets dragged into he gets the limb cut out from under him.
Jubei cuts his limb out from under him. He falls in the water.
Yeah, he falls in the water. He's fighting Jubei under the water. Jubei's just sitting there letting time pass for the wasps to, like, kill him, in essence, trying to escape the water. But the other two devils are just like, first off, they explain it. Oh, the wasps are trying to fight their way out of his body because they're in water and they don't like water. And then they just leave. Like, the dude died. You'd think the devils would be like, okay, our turn.
Jubei is, like, horribly injured prior to this and, like, panting out the riverside. No way to defend himself. We'll leave.
Yeah, let's just leave him. Like, you think the devils at that point would be like, okay, you had your turn, you failed. It's our turn to fight him now and kill him. But apparently they just left. I don't know why. But yeah, no, it was nifty. They did have they had Kagero. Apparently she has, like, Sakura petals or some sort of petals.
She had the ability to, like, throw pollen into the air out of her sleeve.
And it has, like, a sleeping property?
Yeah, yeah. Ninja ability.
Supernatural ninja abilities. So, yeah, she was able to somehow have these leaves and pollen, like, circle her, or petals, I guess flower petals and pollen circle her, putting wasps to sleep. And I am curious.
Delaying their death.
Aren't wasps, like, poisonous, which is why they're deadly to us? Is, like, they're, when they sting us, there's, like, some sort of poison, in essence. So why would it matter for her if she's immune to poison?
The rest of them weren't. The old man and Jubei weren't.
Well, no, but they, like, show her.
She was just distracting them.
Well, but they show her, like, when he finally defeats the guy. And they just fly off. Like, the whole time they're showing that she's getting worn down, like, engaging with these wasps. Like, she's having a hard time breathing. Like, she's getting worn down from this assault of wasps. I don't know if
it's the ninja technique. She ran out of mana.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. Is this pollen technique she was using up mana. And maybe that's why she was getting tired. They don't really explain. I guess the idea is that there's a clock that she can only hold out for so long, and he had to kill the guy in time. It just felt a little weird because the wasps, the big thing is, like, they're poisonous.
Though I think you could still, even if they weren't poisonous, I think you could still die from
just like raw stinging.
Raw stinging because you take so much nerve damage of like constant attack and you just have like a heart attack or something.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know either, because to my knowledge, when it comes to like bees and wasps and stuff, usually the issue people run into is you get stung so much that the toxin builds up enough in your system that it like mm-hmm. gives you a heart attack or whatever.
Yeah.
It just felt a little weird. But anyway, now we get to the chick who I really wish something would have happened with, because I don't, do they ever actually beat the bomb chick?
Yeah, it's on the boat. The old man does it.
That's right. Yeah, she gets covered in oil. Okay. No, the old man. The old man does
covers her in oil, and Jubei's just there with a candle, like, oh, but I'm here, and drops the candle. Yeah, and blows her up.
That's how forgettable it was. I rewatched the movie like an hour before we recorded, and I forgot once again how she gets beat. Because it's kind of annoying. Because they kind of play her.
She's got a boring power. She's got explosive powers. She's just can control gunpowder or something.
I don't think she has any power. Well, she has power to some extent. She seems to be able to control things. She'll like load that
filled with gunpowder.
Yeah, she'll load gunpowder, like sew gunpowder into like a rat or a person. And then she seemingly can make them do certain things for some reason.
Yeah, stiffly move around.
Well, I think the stiff is just the fact that she's sewn like gunpowder in them. But yeah, she seems to be able to control beans to an extent. And she likes to use that to deliver gunpowder. I really liked, part of me wants to hate it, but I really liked that they were building up the leader of the Eight Devils a lot.
Yeah.
And then she just kills him.
Right. As another betrayal of the eight demons.
Yeah. They're like,
she kills him because he won't sleep with her.
Yeah. I did like that. And it is funny because it's a callback. She kills him in the same concept of how he killed the other Snake Lady, where she's like, he walked into my trap. He let himself die to it. That's his fault. He's an amateur. Like, it's just the exact same ploy again, where it was just cleverly done.
Yeah.
He has Jubei dead to rights, and then a rat just explodes and kills him. I love it. It's like I said, part of it.
Yeah, but Jubei's still alive at this point. But she's actively ruined this plan.
Mm-hmm. She just doesn't care. And I think she thought she got both of them. But I think the idea of why Jubei survived was because he was able to cut the string because the dude got distracted by the rat. So mm-hmm. he fell into that lower part of the building when the explosion happened. I think that's the concept of how he survived.
Yeah, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, the dude was holding him by the string, which he can apparently generate electricity, which he sends through these wires. He was holding by it, then he turned, saw the rat, and was like, what? Rat, rolls over. You see the sew line. Oh, explosive rat. And the dude's distracted by this, and Jubei just, cuts the string, falls down as the rat explodes. Mm-hmm. So I think the idea was he survived because he was on the ground floor when the rat exploded on the second floor. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she, in essence, did actively just ruin the plot. Because you wouldn't sleep with me, so screw you. Right. But it was amusing because it does build up to this dude who you think is going to be like this big fight. And the movie, in essence, is like, no, this guy's worthless. Genma's the big fight.
Well, he would have been the big fight if they could stop betraying each other at any point.
Which is why
he would have won.
Yeah, which is why I love that the movie did that. And it's just like, no, this guy's nothing. You think he's going to be the big fight. But the devils don't care, and this guy is nothing. Yeah. The guy, I think, is nothing anyway, because it seems like you don't get to see if he's a good ninja, but it seems like his big thing is just that he controls the strings and can generate electricity. We don't see him do anything else.
Right.
So it might be that the guy actually is not that good. So they could have undermined us twice. So that chick, though, as you said,
dies after that, to her own explosion by getting covered in oil. And then we're up to Genma's fight.
So I know that this idea, this trope of an immortal villain is, this isn't the first thing to do it. It's not the last thing to do it.
No, that's always, that is always like the last boss has always got to be immortal, right?
Yeah. Or seemingly immortal.
Right.
I do like the way they handle it though.
I love that it shows Jubei wins the fight several times over, but Genma can just reattach his arm, reattach his head, recombine his split in half head.
Yeah. They, so first off, a bit of backstory. Genma, was Genma a lord? I don't remember if he was lord. In essence, Genma, though, was a part of having Jubei's old group that he was in, like, kill each other. They did something which made him know too much. So then Genma was part of getting those people to kill each other to, like, hush everyone.
Right.
So Genma was killed by Jubei a long time ago. Jubei jumped out from underground on the road and, like, slit his head off while he was riding a horse.
Yes.
And it turns out that he seemingly can control every molecule of his body to the extent that it lets him be immortal. He could reattach his head.
Which is also crazy that Jubei jumped out, cut his head off, and didn't, you know, like, burn the body or something.
At the same time, he didn't know he was immortal, so you probably would just...
Yeah, but, like, do you just leave a corpse on the side of the road like that?
And
especially a corpse of, like, your greatest enemy, basically?
In feudal Japan, probably. I mean, in reality, would you feel the need to do anything else other than maybe take his head and, like, stick it on a pike somewhere or whatever to, like, show, hey, this guy was bad and I killed him? I mean, they, in essence, were assassins. They're ninjas. So I could see how it would just be cut his head off. It's over. Walk away.
Yeah.
Like, just.
I get it. I probably would have burned the body so nobody could ever find him, but.
Maybe you wanted him to be found, though, as, like, don't betray us or, like, Either way, it turns out he's immortal, so now we're fighting him again. But the reason I like it is you mentioned a few times about the way they play through it. The movie tells you that you're stupid in the best way, where it's like, okay, the dude's immortal, so he starts fighting him. How do you think he's going to win? Oh, you think he's going to, like, cut him apart? Well, here, he cuts off his arm. The guy puts it back on. You think maybe he can crush him. He crushes the face in.
I want to point out that the arm cut off scene, like, it got, there was a whole big fight scene and it felt like the end of the fight.
Yeah.
And it would have been in a show where the villain couldn't put his arm back on.
Yeah. Like, he starts beating him. He cuts off the arm, starts beating him. And then the dude's just kind of like, nope, never mind. Like you said, it would be the end otherwise. And they just keep doing that over and over. He puts the arm back on. Okay, now what's he going to do? Well, he, I forget what exactly leads up to it, but a bit more fighting happens, and he just starts headbutting the dude and, like, crushes his face in. And it's like, oh, it's over. Nope, his face just reassembles.
Yes.
Well, okay, how else do you defeat him? Maybe sever more of him. I don't know. So the guys start fighting again, and he just stabs him and then slits him up the middle. It'd be over, but no, it's not. Okay, he's immortal, so, like, burn him. They fight a bit more. Then a giant pillar, a giant piece of wood, like, impales the dude, and it's on fire, seemingly burning the guy. Mm-hmm. Surely he's dead now. He's on fire. Like, you can control your body all you want. If it burns to ash, like, you can't regen. Nope, the dude just gets back up with a giant pillar sticking out of him. Mm-hmm. Like, over and over, the movie's like, this is how you think he can beat an immortal enemy. He tries it. It fails. Like, move on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And the way they finish it, again, I said,
is a pure sense of retribution. The whole movie was about this gold that they had pulled out of a mine, and they put on this boat. Genma dies by having him, I want to point out this is stupid, the gold that was liquefied by the fire,
yeah,
that washes over Genma and then drops him into the ocean.
Yeah. So he wins by happenstance.
Yes.
Which is kind of fitting of how you beat an immortal being. It's like literally there was nothing he could do. He was going to lose the fight.
Yes. It was very obvious he was going to lose the fight until randomly enough gold washed over him to cover him, to cover Genma entirely, and then reformed in the ocean, or like salt solidified in the ocean, and then dropped him to the bottom.
Yes. So he didn't win, but he won.
Yes.
Genma's not dead.
No.
He's trapped.
Though I don't know if you can, if you can control every molecule of your body. I don't know if you can get enough oxygen to live at the bottom of the ocean, though.
Well, but if his body...
Do you understand how to make gills?
Well, but the thing is, why does drowning kill you? Like, your cells can't function without oxygen, so they die. But if he can control the molecules of his body to prevent cells from dying, he would just nonstop regenerate himself underwater forever. It's a matter of, we don't know how much control he has over these molecules. Does he need to expend energy to do the regenerating to where he would have to continue to eat or whatever to like create energy? Or can he just in essence will them to not die? In which case, he'll just be stuck on the bottom of the ocean, trapped in gold for a long time.
Like, yeah, until somebody pulls him up, probably.
Which will probably happen.
Or he gets washed ashore at some point.
Yeah, that ship is not that far out into the ocean.
And if a government found out that there was a shipment of gold at the bottom of the ocean, like just a couple hundred feet out outside, they would probably send some divers out there to see if they could find anything.
Yeah, they know it's there, so yeah,
free gold.
Don't take the gold statue. Leave that.
Yeah, just leave that.
Take the rest of the gold. Don't take the gold statue. But then even if the government doesn't know, the ship, though it burns, it's wood. So it is still floating to an extent. Eventually it'll deteriorate and sink. But that means random people could probably also see it and then potentially go out there searching for whatever it was carrying. Mm-hmm. It might eventually get there. But it was nice to see them escalate it and be like, how do you think he's going to beat him? Well, we're going to show that fail. And it just keeps doing that to the point where it's like, okay, he literally can't win. And the only reason he won is happenstance that the gold melted and covered the bad guy. So I liked it. It was a nifty way to end it.
I wrote that down as explicitly like is a good and it was an excellent fight and a really good way to have a villain die, an immortal villain die.
Yeah, because I think most media goes the route of trying to explain why they're immortal, like as some form of regeneration or whatever. And then.
Right. And then beating that regeneration in some way.
Yeah. Whether that be a core that you have to defeat because the body itself doesn't matter, or whether it's you have to kill every single cell all at once. So like you explode them or burn them or whatever.
We attacked so quickly, his body wasn't able to regenerate, and then he died.
Yeah, if this was a modern anime, they would get punched so fast and so quickly that it just explodes every cell of their body, because that's totally a modern anime way of doing it.
Yeah.
I punched so hard, he disintegrated. That'd be the All Might method of defeating him.
Yeah.
No, I thought it was very clever. We kind of mentioned a bit, but at the end, he defeats him, and Dakuan just pretty much says, hey, yo, you did the job I wanted. Cool. He had been bugging him the entire time where he told Kagero that, hey, if you sleep with him, your poison will neutralize his poison and he'll be saved because he only had a day and a half to live when Daquan poisoned him.
Yes. This is prior to the boat fight that they resolved this.
I find it interesting.
I just realized we forgot the fight where they, this whole section where they fight the ninja.
Yeah. I was partially getting to that. First off, I do find it funny how he beat the ninja. It totally shows what kind of ninja that guy was, mm-hmm. where he apparently can control people as well through certain means, has her fight the main guy. But I love how he throws out his claw to like grab the sword. He's like, I'm going to neutralize your weapon so she can kill you. And I do like how he's just like, oh, you want my sword? Have it. And just throws the sword at him.
Yeah.
And kills the dude.
Kills him.
It's like, oh, it's clever. The dude hides in shadows and like shoots out this chain. He might not be the best fighter or like the most strategic. So it actually kind of was fitting that the dude's, no one's probably ever thought to just throw the weapon at him.
Right.
They might drop their weapon or whatever, but he's just kind of like, here, have it. And just chucks the sword at him and it kills him. And it kind of makes sense as well, because what would he do? I guess move in the shadow? He can't come out of the shadow.
Right.
So yeah, it was a kind of a, I thought that was a fairly clever way of killing him.
Yeah. We also got a very intense visual scene because that whole thing was set in a very red.
Oh yeah. Oh.
Section with lots of blood in a fight.
I forgot that shift to a red filter over the entire screen was very artistic, and it was nifty because when they do get to the part where you know that he's bleeding and that blood was coming out, the fact that you can't see it because the entire screen is red and it just totally blends in really adds a weird visceral feel to the whole experience, where it's like even blood doesn't matter in this situation. Like it's just...
Everything matters is the shadows and the expressions on people's faces.
Yeah.
And then immediately following that, Jubei passes out and wakes up in a extremely blue scene.
Yeah.
With Kagura confessing the sex can solve your poison issue.
Which is it? So part of why I found, and was leading up to talking about this, found it intriguing to me, is because I think this entire thing, though it is supposed to be a look at the character of Kagura and Jubei and this idea of like their morals and their viewpoints, like in this weird stressful situation of like she in essence is realizing that she likes him and he seemingly likes her but not at the same time, which is why in most modern stuff they would just have it be, oh, I love you too type situation, or I refuse to accept this. In this one, it's more of the, you think that he has a feeling for her, but it's not his concern. Like he's just not worrying about it. He's just like, this is not at all on my plate. I'm just going to ignore it.
We're dealing with the Genma situation first, and then we can figure everything else out, sort of thing.
And even when it's like, hey, I can literally cure your poison, he's like, don't care. I want to kill Genma, and if I die in the process, that's fine. I'll deal with that later. But what I was getting at is this scene, though, it is all this at the same time. I think it also tells you a lot about Daquan, because she doesn't have to sleep with him, but they ignore that and they don't even think about that, because the entire time it's like a kiss from her is so deadly that it would kill, which means it kills
his poison. They have the dramatic scene where she kisses him while she's dying.
Yeah. So that's a lot about Daquan that he's like, you have to sleep with him. Like, she doesn't. And no, he's seemingly...
Daquan was being a pervert and been like, make them...
Part of me wonders if it's... I think they're playing it as it's partially him being a pervert, but I think part of it is him just screwing with them. Like, he just, mm-hmm. he wants to play with them like they're toys and, like, pawns in his thing.
Yeah.
So I think he's just trying to be like, you two, I'm going to make you two hook up because I can.
Make the two dolls kiss.
Yeah. Because he tells her, like, you have to sleep with him, even though in reality she just probably needs to give him a bit of mucus or kiss him. And then later...
I'm wondering if the poison she had, if they had actually slept together, if her poison would have overwhelmed the poison and gone on to double poison him. Like, it overwhelmed the poison Jubei was infected with and then proceeded to poison him again over it.
It would totally be something that he would do. And that's why I love it so much, because though this entire thing is kind of about those two, it has that undertone of Daquan and you learning more about him, because he pushed her to do this. And then after the fact, he's poking Jubei and it's like, you slept with her, didn't you? You slept with her, didn't you? Like, just seemingly like poking him and being like, yes, like, you're my doll and you're going to do what I say. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, Jubei's just like, it's not your concern. Like, screw you. This has nothing to do with you.
He never confirms or denies it.
Yeah.
Which just leads Daquan to believe that he was right.
Yeah, but he was wrong, which is great. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think he brings it up at least twice, if not three times, about like, did you sleep with her or you slept with her, didn't you? Yeah. And he never gets the answer, which makes you wonder once again at the very end when he's like, you won't get to shore. Does he know? He seemingly doesn't know for sure whether the poison is still killing him. So I wonder if that was also part of why he just like lets him go. I wonder if he also thinks, I don't think he actually kissed her or anything, so he'll just die by my poison anyway.
He'll either, I'm thinking this was a double or like several layers of plan. He either won't make it to shore because he's weak from the fight. He won't make it to shore because he's poisoned from my poison originally. He's poisoned because he had sex with her and poisoned from her.
Yeah. And all of it's not the case.
She kissed him, which neutralized his poison, but didn't overwhelm him.
Yeah.
And he was able to survive because he's a badass.
Yeah. You see him. I one of the things I also enjoy about this, it's just crazy that this is such an old story, yet it did so much well. Now, with that being said, is this thing amazing? No. I like it. It is kind of popcorn showy. It is old school. Old school action.
I think part of the reason I gave it a 10 is because it was exactly what I wanted to watch at the time.
Yeah. If you want crazy supernatural ninjas fighting, it is great for that. But what I was getting into, though, is despite how old it is and what it was doing, it did such a good job of still putting that much thought into the characters. Like, we seemingly drop in on a weird small portion of these people's lives, which is generally bad nowadays. Like, most shows nowadays do a horrible job at this. They try to, like, set up this entire history of these characters. They're trying to make you feel like you're part of these people's lives to try to get more emotion out of you. This one's just like, nope, we're going to take these 1.5 days as is the way it is. Like, we're not going to try to attach you to these people. You're going to get attached because of what's happening during these 1.5 days.
Yeah, a lot of stuff we see now is if you introduce a character, they're going to get a 5 to 10 minute section of the movie or the show and explain their motivations and their backstory.
Yeah, because so
that you care about them.
Yeah, we still know nothing about Kagero. Seemingly at all. How'd she get the way she is?
We know she worked as a poison tester, and we know she was a ninja for the Koga clan, and that she died. Was a little She was a little fed up, and that she doesn't like the idea. She's uncomfortable with the idea of sex because of her poison body.
Yeah, and we know that she hates how she's judged. She mentions that one of the reasons she liked Jubei was that he's the only person that at any point in time has treated her as something other than a female ninja. Because everyone seems to treat her as a female ninja.
She specifically says poison tester at a time, which I believe might be a mistranslation or an obvious or a difficult thing to translate in terms of cultural and background, yeah, sort of thing. Because I know there's a concept called a poison constitution, where like your whole body is poison. So basically, what she is, but it's always played in fiction as, because it's a fictional thing, it's always played as you don't want to go near those people because they could kill you with a glance, basically.
Yeah.
They're always creepy weirdos.
Yeah.
They're always judged for that. And she has never lived a life where she's a woman. She's always lived a life where she's a poison constitution person.
Yeah. And we see early on that she just wanted to be a ninja like all the others. Like, she's like, hey, you were going to go on this mission without me. Like, the Lord's not here. I don't need to be sampling his food and stuff. Like, he's yeah, not here. I can be a ninja like all the other ninjas. So, yeah, he treats her differently.
There were no other female ninjas in that group of, like, 20,
yeah,
who died at the beginning. So she was probably also experiencing severe sexism from that.
Probably. In part, the thing is, I will say, I do appreciate that the sexism that she seemed to be experiencing was not the, all of it to an extent is bad. Don't take my words exactly, but it doesn't seem like it's the bad version of it, where it seemed like the guy in charge of the ninjas just wanted to keep her safe.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think it was her daughter. She was his daughter, wasn't she? Wasn't he?
That or like an adopted person, or I don't know for sure. I don't remember, but it seemed like we see him looking at her in that way of like, I feel bad that that is your life, that you are, mm-hmm, like, you're not going to get to experience anything outside of being the person who is poisoned.
Yeah.
So it seemed like it was more of trying to protect her and like let her have somewhat of a life, that he was having her not be on the mission until she's like, no, I'm going on the mission. So I will say it at least was nice that they went that route. And it wasn't just, oh, you're a girl, you're not a strong enough ninja, I can't trust you.
I don't think anyone explicitly mentions like, oh, you're not that strong. They just say, but you're a poison tester.
Just once again, this was in the 90s, and they just completely ignored that part of it. Like, they didn't try to, play her off as not being bad. And the same later, when it is sad that she had to die. Under the trope, she had to die to make the main character like get serious enough to do his thing. Kind of annoying. But that being said, they played it off the best way possible, where her death was not purely that. Like, they showed her as, or her character was not purely, you're going to die to make the main character get serious. Because leading up to that, those two kept saving each other.
Like, yes. I didn't see her dying prior. It didn't seem like she was going to die.
She seemed like she was fully competent, good at what she does. She saved him a few times, he saved her a few times. Like, she was on equal footing to what we could tell the entire time up to that. So they played it off the best way they could, and on top of that, he didn't get that much more serious from her death. Like, it was more of, he had nothing else, so I'm definitely gonna kill Genma because he killed her and the people in the past reason.
Yeah.
Not so much that, like, oh, she died, so now I'm going to, like, go Super Saiyan Tier 3 to, like, kill him. So they handled it very well, which is impressive for something from 1993. Like, wow. I guess maybe it's because it's not Western media that, like, they handled a lot of these topics really well.
I don't know.
I was impressed by it. I liked it. It's as good as I remember. I remember watching it that first time and being like, oh, yeah, this is It's good. I have no real complaints. The only complaints I have are it's from 1993. It's not going to look as pretty. It's a little bit
more... I really like the art style, actually. Like, it almost made me want to go back and watch Fist of the North Star.
Yeah. It's... it reminds me of why I like when you see modern anime go back and do, like, hand-drawn or, like, replicated hand-drawn. Because what was it? Grimgar? Is that one of the ones that did the old hand-drawn style?
I didn't get into Grimgar.
I think... was it Grimgar? I remember which one, because it was one of the isekai ones where it was like kids, if I remember right, is the one I'm thinking of. I think that was Grimgar. They did the hand-drawn style, and there's been a couple of others that have tried to replicate, if not straight up done hand-drawn animation, even the modern era. And it is a art style that I appreciate. It is more artistic, and with that restriction of like a hand-drawn style, it makes people come up with more clever and unique ways of displaying certain things that I think creates a better, more artistic take overall. When you have the digital age and you can just copy paste certain items a whole bunch,
right?
People don't put as much effort into, I think, displaying things the best way they can.
Yeah. So I will say the water in this looked amazing.
Yeah, actually highly impressive for, that restriction of that old style. I will say the biggest issue I had artistically, and I know that this was a lot of the restriction of the age, the amount of times that they... Okay, first off, if you've gotten this far, you haven't seen it, and you're thinking about seeing it, warning, there is a lot of flashing bright lights. If you have seizure-prone, epileptic-prone issues with that, do not watch it. There is a lot of moments where there's very bright light that flickers. Yeah, be very cautious.
Yeah.
And that's also part of the thing I'm getting at is the amount of times where like the sky was just white, like super white, just straight up like someone shone a light right into the sky. Kind of didn't look good. So that was my biggest artistic styling complaint, nitpick, was there was times where half the screen was nothing but pure white, super bright light. And that made it hard to see detail on the parts that weren't that. That also is probably an issue with modern televisions watching this. I feel like on a CRT, that actually probably would look better. But modern LEDs are just so bright that...
This was also in 4x3, so it definitely did not look great on my...
Yeah. So I kind of wish I had a CRT floating around because I would love to rewatch it on that and see if that coloration looks better. LEDs are, I think, are just too bright for that sky. I don't know if you had any other like nitpicks, hitpicks. I have a few things I do want to mention nitpick wise.
We totally forgot about the blind guy.
Oh, because there's just...
It was just like a 10-minute scene of the fight, but whatever.
The big problem with that fight is it had nothing to do with the guy himself, which I will say actually a decent amount of the devils kind of were that, where it had nothing to do with them as much as to do with what else was going on. His entire fight was just more of a fight between Jubei and Kagera, where he's like, yo, stop being part of this. You're going to die. And she's like, nope, I'm still going to fight next to you and help you. So the blind man fight was purely a fight between those two, not so much the blind guy.
Right. Yeah. It was more a declaration of I'm going to assist you more than anything else.
So I think that's part of why we totally just forgot it. Cause it literally had nothing to do with him.
And yeah. Though he did personify the trope of a blind swordsman being really strong because he's using his other senses.
Yeah, his hearing is so powerful that it doesn't matter. And they did use the trope of blind guy fight in a bamboo forest.
Yeah. that straight up is the trope.
Yeah, blind swordsman in a bamboo forest, because then you can cut the bamboo and it falls and makes noise, or the leaves fall and make noise, and it doesn't matter because he's so good he can hear through it.
Right, yeah.
But once again, I don't know that... Our main character, I think only out of the eight devils, Jubei, I think, only technically beats two of them. Like, I think pretty much all of them are better than him. He kills the claw ninja guy. Like, he straight up just beats that guy. Throws his sword at him, easily kills him.
He and even before that, he cuts off his leg when they're doing the when he attacks them in the woods. The claw dude does the ninja shadow clone like thing.
And doesn't matter because he just slices through all the clones and the real one in one swing.
Yep.
But he beats that guy. And he technically beats the bomb girl by dropping the flame. We didn't mention that
that was 50%
was an assist.
Old man.
It was an assist. We forgot to mention that the old man was going to put the candle to the oil, but she blew out. She cut the wick / blew out the candle. Mm-hmm. And that's when our main character's like, I'm here too. Drop candle.
Yeah.
But he kind of technically beat her. I think most of the fights he wins because of an assist or something else happening that he just happens to win.
I don't think anybody particularly wins a fight by themselves.
Which is, once again, kind of a relief that, like, as he's getting these engagements, you're not like, oh, he's just going to win. It's like, okay, how is he going to win?
Like, so now that I think about it, if they're doing they win all the fights with assists from other people, that's why they won, because none of the villains work together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, two of the villains get beat by other villains. It's like, you could kind of argue they beat the snake lady, but they really didn't.
Like, he beat the wasp man by himself, kind of. But that's only because she's distracting the major portion of the wasps.
Well, and on top of that, does he really? The wasps kill the guy. So he just kind of put him in a circumstance for
where
him
he
to
would die from, being eaten. I would give that as his victory because he wouldn't have fallen in the water otherwise.
But that's two. Because, like, like we said, the bomb chick kind of was an assist then. So, So he straight up beat the wasp guy and the ninja guy. So two out of eight.
Yeah.
Two out of eight lost two other devils. So half of them, it's kind of impressive. Once again, kind of clever, and you don't see that nowadays. Yeah. Nowadays, it would just be
the main characters can one-on-one an enemy and win, the general trope now. Nah.
And if they can't, they scream harder and eventually can.
Right.
So it is kind of why does it feel so much? This movie feels so much like a relief compared to modern shows.
Yeah, I'm kind of sick of the main character is stronger than most things. Like, nobody works together. They're always like, let's pair off against one of the villains each.
Yeah. Oh man, I think that's probably part of why we just liked it so much and why I had so few notes is just what there is to talk about is just such a relief that it almost feels like these things shouldn't be worth mentioning and like making a note on, but in the grand scheme of things, it's so unique to how things are done nowadays and so interesting compared to how things are done nowadays that it almost is worth making note on. It's so weird. A couple nitpicks real quick. We kind of got into them and then we once again started praising it for doing things differently. I did like the trope of the fact that our main character, though he is a mercenary for hire, takes into account the finances of the person that hires him.
Yes. Like, in the first scene, which we kind of didn't talk about, we learn two things, that he's generous from the fact that he was willing to take a job for that cheap, and that he's honorable because he didn't betray them.
Yeah. So, and we learn that because some guys were hired to steal something and they were paid 300 gold to steal.
They were going to get 300 gold.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they were going to be paid 300 gold to steal this item. Our main character stopped them and did it for 20 gold.
Yes.
And they're like, what the hell? It's worth way more than that. Why the hell would you do it for 20 gold? And his response is, because they're a small clan that don't have that much money. So why would I ask for more than they can provide? Basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, if all they can afford to pay me is 20 gold, I'll do it for 20 gold. So it's like, what? Okay. That's kind of unique. Like, mm-hmm. he's doing it because he partially feels it's probably right. Like, this was stolen from them. It's theirs. They deserve it. And he's willing to just go by whatever financial means make sense for the people.
Mm-hmm.
Also kind of unique. Nowadays, they would either be like, oh, it's right, so I'll do it for free. Or in modern time, they might do the opposite one, too, where it's like, oh, it's not worth that, so I'm just not going to help you or whatever.
Well, they would return the sword and go, like, either ask for way too, they're like, oh, we can only afford this much. And then he would ask for something else on top of it.
Maybe. Yeah.
But that thing would be like a hidden gem sort of thing that he was like, oh, I recognize that this kunai was actually yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Modern one would either A, do it for free, or B, they would ask for compensation equivalent to its value, whether that's another item or whatever. So it's nice to see someone who's just like, in essence, it's worth 3%, whatever 3% is of like your finances. Like, it's nice just to be like, this seems about right. You can afford this. It's enough money. Yeah. So that was nice. But no, nitpick wise, one of the ones I had was, okay, I don't know of a single horse that's just going to be okay with you like going out into the ocean.
Right.
Like, he just rides the horse into the ocean and it swims for him. What? To my knowledge, horses don't like water that much.
No.
Especially salt water, I would think. But okay.
Yeah, horses really don't like to be in the water, especially deep water.
Yeah, highly trained horses, yeah, you could probably easily cross rivers or something with them, but like, he just swims out into the ocean.
I was like, that horse is dead.
Yeah.
Even if it turns around, I don't know if it could still make it to shore.
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't like that one. I also didn't like when him and the girl were hanging by his thread. I was like, that thread is so thin, and you guys weigh so much that wherever you are grabbing that thread or whatever it's wrapping around is either A, you're going to lose your grip because it's so small and you weigh so much, or B, it's going to cut through your wrist or whatever the heck it's wrapped around.
Right. Like,
no, you're not hanging from this thing.
Got freaking adamantine wires.
Yeah.
Let me see if that's an item in D&D, because I kind of want that.
I'm sure there's some equivalent to it. I was like, that's just, there's a lot of supernatural stuff in this, but there's certain things that you look at and you're like, you could have made that part a little more realistic.
I know the indestructible wires are a Japanese ninja trope. So,
all it would have taken was like, show him grabbing a piece of wood or something. Like, it was wrapped around a piece of wood inside his arm or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's like what it's been wrapped around. So like, they could have shown that where it's just like, he grabbed a handle, like as the wire was coming out, and like, he's holding onto the handle. Cause yes, it won't go through a piece of wood that acts like a handle. It will go through your wrist. If it's wrapped around your wrist.
Yeah.
They just show him holding it and they show him climbing up it. Thin wire is really hard to hold on to.
Without it cutting your hands open.
Yeah, let alone that. Like, just first off, your hand can't quite close enough.
Yeah.
To, like, grab something thin.
Pinch it and climb up.
Just
have so much finger strength that you can pull yourself up from your index fingers.
Yeah, because most people, you would have to, like, grab it and then twist it a bit to, like, get a hold on it, but then it would start cutting through your skin. So whatever. It was just one I was like, okay, whatever. It's supernatural. I'll overlook it, but it's a bit of a nitpick where,
yeah,
come on, guys. I mean, he's able to pull his sword using that wire. So I guess it's not the worst thing. Like I said, I just didn't have too many notes. One of the best shots I have ever seen in an animated film. This includes Miyazaki. Miyazaki has gorgeous stuff. By the way, I put this up there on par with Miyazaki films. His are more of an artistic thing, and that's why they're so beloved, is the art and the world building. This one, I think, just is very well put together. So I'd put it up there with Miyazaki's films for just great anime films. But this shot is hands down the best shot I've ever seen in an anime. And that was with the blind guy, where you see our protagonist run at him in the reflection of the blind guy's sword. That was so gorgeous and so well done.
Yeah, there are some really beautiful shots. I would have said that whole scene where they're with the waterfalls and like the high mountains.
That one was
like when they're in, starting getting into that.
Yeah, that some of the opening like cold opening shots of like the bridge and that's just gorgeous scenery, and that is very Miyazaki-esque, just gorgeous artwork. But just how well that shot was done in everything, because you see the blind guy, classic, like sword to one side of the face held up, very classic shot just in general. But then that twist of it where he does like the twist of the blade, you get the reflection in the blade, but that is our protagonist running at him. And then like doing the sideways jump as the two like run sideways towards the bamboo forest. Like I said, it was just so well done in every way, like just aesthetically very nice composition, just the way they animated that slit in the blade where you see the action of the main character running towards him. I was just hands down impressed by that. It was so well done. I will say as a 90s film, there was a lot of show response, not show action, which is still an issue today for certain studios. But I do think they showed more action than a lot of modern studios do in general. So that also kind of impressed me. A decent amount of action was shown in the grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, overall, I love it. 8 out of 10. Highly recommend anyone who likes supernatural action and a bit of that intrigue / deception.
Yeah.
Gorgeous movie. Love it. Can't gush enough. Say
spoilers at the beginning of this episode. Yeah. The whole thing was a spoiler.
Yeah, I forgot the spoiler alert. Maybe I'll just add it back in. I'll just
I was going to say put a scrolling thing of like spoilers at the bottom when we start the episode.
That works great for the YouTube viewers, but not the podcast viewers, listeners.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I'll just take this part right here.
We'll cut
us talking about how there are spoilers. We got to the end and forgot the spoiler alert. So, spoiler alert. That'll work
well.
Now back to where it was before.
Ooh.
Oh well. No, I loved it. People, feel free to recommend other old movies, old shows. I know we have a few on our list. Some of them I mentioned earlier, stuff like Trigun. I would love to get Andrew to watch Trigun.
Yep, I still haven't seen Trigun.
I absolutely adore Rurouni Kenshin, but there's 96 episodes, so we probably will never cover that. Recommend things. We've been getting a couple of recommendations of shows. Keep it up. We'd love for you to tell us what to do. AnimeDigression@gmail.com. You can email us or at AnimeDigression on Twitter. Make recommendations. With that, thank you all so much for listening, and hope to see you at the next one. Bye.
Bye-bye.